From the Three Story Method Podcast Network.
This is the Serial Fiction Show.
I'm Christine Daigle.
And I'm JP Reinbush.
Welcome to the Reader's Serial Fiction Show. Today, we've got a humorous paranormal story by J.T. Blakely called Nerds, National Recently Deceased Services.
So, ghosts are real, and there's an underfunded government agency who helped the recently deceased transition into the afterlife. Spiritual energy is running wild in the rural Midwest, and when a remote nerd's office settles in, nothing goes according to plan. Follow this cast of nerds as they work through spirit cases, struggle with small-town politics, and try to dig themselves out of tons and tons of paperwork. Because what is a government agency without an insurmountable amount of red tape?
And now a sample of Nerds, Episode 1.
This ghost killed two of our agents and we're just going to stand here with our dicks in our hands? The spunky agent with the high ponytail said. Buck ignored her, shifting his weight from his right leg to his left as he looked past the bright sodium streetlights to apartment 1097. I say we just charge in and take the bastard down, one of the younger agents declared. The kid looked barely out of high school, barely even peach fuzz on his baby face. He looked especially young, standing next to the guy built like a tank with tattoos streaming up his neck. Buck hoped something would happen soon. His 61-year-old knees couldn't stand here much longer, and the five nerds agents crowding behind him only added to his discomfort. They all wore the same crisp black and white suit, too, which clashed with his well-worn brown one. Even the briefcases they held looked brand new compared to his older model. Newbie nerds, always dressed to impress. "Come on, Chief. There's six of us and one of it. We can take it," Tattoo Neck agreed. "We wait on Buck," Agent Rogers said. She was a tall black woman with a shaved head, a gold nose ring. She was their team leader, and the only one who seemed to know what she was doing. The National Recently Deceased Services was smart to make her a team leader, Buck thought. "What are we waiting for, Buck?" Babyface whined. Buck sighed and loosened the tie around his neck. "Come on, Chief. This old timer here is going to have us standing out here all night," Tattoo Neck complained. "We wait on Buck," Rogers said. A car rolled past them, paying no notice. Even in downtown Chicago, this back street was quiet at 2 a.m. A light flickered in the apartment. "Did you see that? That was it, right? Let's go," Number 5 said, his eyes never leaving the apartment window. Tall, jittery junior agent. Buck considered the light. Could just be the daughter getting a glass of water. Or it could be killing someone else, Tattoo Neck countered. "Anyone know what level this is?" Buck asked. "I know it killed Agents White and Anderson," Ponytail blurted out. The rest mumbled in agreement. "So, no?" Buck pushed. Their mumbles quieted. "None of you," Buck said, looking each one of the junior agents in the eye. "No one has any idea what we are walking into." And with a sigh, he returned to watching the apartment. "Doesn't matter. We can take it," Tattoo Neck spoke up. "What's your name, Agent?" Buck asked without looking back. "Anthony Ramirez, third generation, 2-year agent with 21 hostile catches," Ramirez bragged. 2 years in. That's about where the rest of you are too, huh?" Buck asked. There was a murmured response. "Why, then, are you all so eager to join White and Anderson? You have some kind of third-gen death wish?" No, sir, Ramirez said, looking down at the ground. Rogers raised a hand. "The main office sent Buck to us because he's a legend. You all know his stats. Over 3,000 hostile catches, over 40 years in the agency. And I know we've all heard about the Night of 25, or the South Shore Stampede, or the Morgan Park Massacre. I mean, guys, this is Buck Hampton. This man here is in the manual, right?" The team murmured in agreement. So, as much as we all want to charge in there, maybe we give Buck a little respect and wait for his call. Got it? Yes, Captain, the team mumbled in agreement. Great. Now stay focused, because tonight we're going to take this son of a bitch down, Rogers said. Buck sighed. Hearing his stats only brought back terrible memories and reminded him of how old he was. Another car rolled by, and Buck looked at his watch. 2:34. The last agents went in around 2:30. We lost contact shortly after. If the pattern holds, it'll be any second now, Rogers stated the facts she knew he already knew. Buck agreed. He squeezed his silver standard-issue badge and looked back up at the apartment, squinting. Look! Look! He heard Babyface shout. What first looked like a trick of the light slowly congealed into a green haze forming in the kitchen window. It's happening, Ponytail confirmed. Frost built at the edges, yet the windows nearby were untouched. Green glow, ice formation, Rogers confirmed. We've got a level 4 confirmation, Ramirez choked. Let's move, Rogers ordered. Her 4 team members raced across the street in a manic rush, swinging their briefcases wildly as they ran. Buck shook his head as he sauntered behind them and laughed when their charge was ground to a halt when 2 of the agents both tried to enter the revolving door at the same time. They wedged themselves into the small triangle of space by meticulously sidestepping into the building. Buck quietly waited his turn as each agent anxiously pushed through the door. By the time Buck made his way into the lobby, Rogers was holding the door to the stairs open, shouting, "Let's move!" as her team raced through the opening. Watching them go, Buck walked to the elevator and pressed the up button. The doors opened and he casually stepped inside. Journey played softly through the elevator speaker and Buck quietly hummed along as he rode the car to the 10th floor and checked his phone. There was a message from his husband. Remember, dear, inexperience is not the fault of the young. It's their connection to wonder. Buck snorted a laugh and stuffed his phone back in his pocket. His husband always knew the best motivational quote to send him. He arrived in the 10th floor hallway a few seconds before the team burst through the stairway door. Let's go, agents, Buck said as he waved them to follow him. He walked in silence down the hall as the team stalked behind him. As they approached the door of apartment 1097, Rogers said, Should we break it down? Buck shot her a glare and said, No. Knocking, he called, Landlord! Gas leak! Open up! When there was no answer, he banged and yelled again, Miss Parker! Miss Parker! It's the landlord! Open up! Rogers whispered nervously, Get ready to breach, men. Ramirez, I want you kicking it down. Lee and Thompson, you are the first 2 through. Briefcases and stun guns ready.
Before we talk to our author, let's talk about our sponsor, Pro Writing Aid.
Pro Writing Aid! I love Pro Writing Aid so freaking much. It is like my last line of defense before I send it out to people. And I constantly get remarks about how clean my drafts are before I send it out to people. And I'm just like, well, I have this sneaky, tricky tool. And I love the Chrome extension in Google Docs. That is where I just keep all my work in. I'm working on my draft and then hit this little drop down and I hit improve document, pops up a screen, shows me all of my problems, I fix it, I hit save and continue, bam, updates into my Google Docs. I don't have to put it somewhere else, it's just right there. It is so good, I love it.
It is the best. And yeah, there's nothing like being in an author Slack and getting called out for such clean writing. I know exactly what you're talking about, JP, and the only 2 people named were us, probably because we use Pro Writing Aid.
Probably, I mean, that's like a 90% likelihood.
It is.
And I'd bet on those odds.
Oh yeah, if you want to check it out, we have a discount code, SERIAL20.
SERIAL20, SERIAL 20. Cereal like the killer, not like the breakfast.
Not like Corn Pops. Nobody likes Corn Pops.
That's also
except
accurate.
Except Zach Bohannon.
And an inside joke.
Okay. All right, let's talk to our author. Woo. Okay, so I love this serial for so many reasons. Ghost possession in a serial that's part Men in Black, part Ghostbusters, part Exorcist, part The Office. And I love the contrast between the seasoned vet and the eager newbie. I thought that was hilarious. So what inspired you to write a paranormal detective serial with humor?
Do you want me to go first? You want me to go first?
I want you to go first.
You want me to go first? I think it was a couple things. One, it's the world's been really depressing for a year and a half. And so I needed to write something that was less serious and more entertaining. That was kind of where the humor side came from. And then for me, the paranormal side just came from like a deep interest in a weird obsession with American history during COVID and an obsession with like the spiritualist movement and like the very strange place that like seances had in American history and the like table turning and tapping and all that. And like, just, I went down a weird rabbit hole during the first of COVID. So that was, I guess it's not a weird rabbit hole. It's weird in that, like, why would I suddenly get really interested in like late 1800s American history, but that's what inspired the two things merging together. And then I drugged JP into my madness with me.
You did.
And he brought a deep wisdom around government bureaucracy, which was fantastic.
Yeah. I would say that for me, I always wanted to write something that involved that sort of like weird under government paranormal, but with so much bureaucracy, because I love that so much. I'm trying to remember the show off the top of my head, and I can't. Miracle Workers. I got it. Season one made me laugh so hard because I've been trying to emulate that before that even came out. So that was like something that I had been thinking of, and then to see it on the screen made me laugh. Because I've worked in quality, and I've had to deal with some insane bureaucracy, especially when one of my companies was reaching for FDA approval, and so just seeing what that looked like, amazing. And so I had that in mind, and then when Jeff and I got talking, he had a short that really encompasses episode two of our serial, and it meshed so well with what I wanted to do that we were able to just kind of like sit down, talk, and build this world together, and it was really fun.
Yeah, it was awesome. I think there's something about the like, it's very, it feels, even though it's about ghosts, it feels very authentic to me that there would be a government agency around something that we don't really understand and consider nonsense, that, but like, that's been around for like 60 years and just kind of like exists in the weird governmental tree of bureaucracy that was like started when America was passionate about something, and then like the passion faded, but the bureaucracy doesn't fade because there's like paperwork to do. So that really, for some reason, this series, the idea of like a government social workers who work with ghosts works because you're like, of course that would exist in the giant bureaucracy that is the government. But yeah.
Yeah, I definitely think there's a lot of humor in government bureaucracy, so I think that was a smart choice. Is seances and spirituality something you've always been interested in, or was that kind of a new interest that came along with the serial?
I grew up very religious, and so I don't think it's something I was interested in, but rather like taught to fear as a child. Like, that's Satan. Don't get near Satan. And I still have like very deep, you know, some people call them superstitious, but like I see the supernatural in a lot of stuff. And so I still kind of hold on to a lot of that. So for me, it's just kind of like, I don't know. There's a weird thrill around supernatural stuff. And like, I think just from childhood, it's like touching something you're not supposed to touch. It's like, yeah, like dangerous behavior. Like, don't play with that. So now I want to like play with it. But yeah.
So it's kind of the draw to something that's forbidden. Or
yeah. Too. Yeah. It's not. And it's not like, you know, in case there are any, you know, very conservative Christian listeners, they're like, well, I'm not reading that because he mentioned Satan. Satan isn't involved in the villain. It's not about Satan. It's about ghosts. Mm-hmm. It's, yeah, very different. But
on that note.
Yeah, but on that note.
I am just very occulty. I was when I was much younger, in high school and in college. I do have a science background, so it is kind of fun to merge the two. And I kind of, you know, I'm way more science forward than I am occulty now. But I have all of this fun knowledge that I just gathered about people's beliefs. Because, I mean, so in college, I was going to have a minor in religious studies. And part of that reason was I love the concept of belief and what power that has, regardless of the faith of the person. And I just really had this interest in a cult and just kind of like the old alchemical tests and texts and stuff. Just because it's fascinating to me how people try to explain the world around them. I love that concept. And so ghosts, seances, all that stuff, that was encompassed in that. It was very much a part of, a significant part of my life.
Yeah, and if I can just rant for a second, because I have a degree in religion and the master's of divinity. And it, so, like, there are ghosts in the Bible, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so, you know, if you are, like, of the conservative bent where you're like, every word of the Bible is true, then you also have to believe in ghosts, because the ghost of Saul or the ghost of Samuel shows up to like taunt Saul in the middle of a seance in the book of 1 Samuel. So like, it's all there. Like, you just gotta, yeah. Anyway, that's my one, I get one biblical rant a podcast. That's my one biblical rant.
Okay. The card has been spent.
That's right. I played my card and I will not play it again.
So alchemy is fascinating. Does that show up at all in this serial?
You know, maybe not, but there has been some discussion about what the world may look like. What?
We have lots of plans.
We have lots of plans. The current world that we have set is very ghost and spirit forward, but we talked about what this world looks like as a whole. Are there other things than ghosts? And I think the overall answer I'm going to give is yeah. But we're still exploring that. So it may show up at some point.
Nice. So what's one thing you'd like listeners to know about or to be excited about?
I think the thing that I want a like listener, reader to be excited about is that like you're going to get, by diving into this Vella, you're going to get like a 15-minute read that is fun and exciting and makes you feel something that isn't heavy. That's the goal. Mm-hmm. Fun and exciting and without like pouring more weight on you. It is, the goal is to give you something you can read and be like, man, that was a little thought provoking and a little, and made me laugh a little bit, and it's going to lighten my day some. That's the goal of how the things, what I hope you come to it is knowing how it's going to make you feel and being excited about having that moment reading the scene.
100% agree. I really want to touch aspects of grief and the grieving process and how that looks different through people, but in a cathartic and with an overtone of humor. Because I feel like there is a need for people to read how other people process emotion, but I feel like we can approach that in a humorous manner so that it's lighthearted. It's something that I want to read, basically. And it's been fun writing it with a co-writer because I can sneak in things that I find funny just to try to get him to laugh. And that's the part that I like about it, is that we're approaching this in such a humorous and fun way, just so that we're both, you know, having fun.
Yeah, and I do feel like, you know, with the pandemic, we've all been, like, surrounded a little bit by death. Like, and just the fear of it, the, like, shadow of it, sometimes the actuality of it. And I a story that comes to mind that reminds me of the Vella is like my wife and I and her brothers were at her grandmother's funeral a couple years ago, and we're all very sad, but we're driving to the funeral and her brother like wants to run a red light. So to run a red light, he takes the like little paper that's his funeral, that the funeralist gave him, and he rolls down his window and he holds it outside the window like he's like, it's some kind of like official badge that like allows him to run whatever red light he wants. And we all started laughing hysterically, and we just couldn't stop laughing because in that moment of like, you know, remorse and like heaviness, we just needed the release. And so that's my hope for this series, is that in this time of like heaviness where we've all been like locked in our homes and, yeah, are we coming back? Are we not coming back? Can I take this mask off? I don't know if I can take this mask off. In the midst of all of that, we can just laugh some and have a good time. Because I think, I know I need it. And so my hope is that other people will find that in this series too.
Yeah. I love my fiction with a touch of humor. So yeah. I'm looking forward to that. So can you talk a little bit about your choice to have an older main character? You don't see a lot of fiction that has a main character in their 60s. What was the thought about using the older main character?
I'm like 95 on the inside. so he's very much who I am on the inside. No, I think that I love older main characters who are struggling with their own self-understanding and their own like understanding of their place in the world. Like Mike from Breaking Bad is a fantastic, or from Better Call Saul, I think is a fantastic example of that kind of character who's like in the second half of his life trying to like redeem whatever it is that he spent his time in, but also just kind of like sick of being around the world that's changing around him, like something, or like Danny Glover in Lethal Weapon, the Murtaugh character in Lethal Weapon. Those characters have always been very endearing to me, and so I love the character of Buck, who's our like older seasoned veteran who's opening this new office in this very small town. I like Buck because there's something endearing in the like needing to redefine yourself after a life of victories and mistakes. Yeah. I think that's what draws me to the older character.
Yeah, definitely. Buck was a creation of Jeff's. But I really like that he is one of the primary main characters. And I feel like part of that is, you know, there are pieces of him. He is this near retirement. And in terms of the story, like we talk about death a lot about transitions. And he's reaching that age and he's kind of turning the guard over to a younger character. And so it fits really well with the story, especially when just like the way that his character functions is so unique and really fun to play with, that yeah, why wouldn't we? I think that there needs to be that older representation for main characters. I've heard of the funny thing on Tumblr is to have a elderly woman with a pair of knitting needles as her weapon in a epic fantasy. Like, I would love to see more of that. So why not?
Yeah. And I think part of what really makes Buck work is something JP brought to the character, which was we gave Buck a partner. His partner's name's Gary. And seeing someone of like who loves Buck for who Buck is, and really brings out the humanity of Buck, I think is part of what makes Buck work, is that like the reader gets to empathize and understand Buck through the eyes of this romantic partner who's been with him for, you know, 30 plus years, and they've like lived this life together. So you get the like grizzled, you know, grumpy, you know, I can't, I'm too old for this shit, Buck. But then you also get to relate to him through the character that JP created in his partner, Gary, which I think is really a beautiful way to see his character.
Yeah, so Buck, who's one of your main point of view characters, is LGBT, mm-hmm. and has what appears, at least in the first three episodes I read, because there aren't any more of that available at this time that we're recording that I have read yet. So he has what appears to either be a chronically or terminally ill partner. Mm-hmm. So is representation important to you in your fiction?
100%.
Yeah, critical.
It was great talking with Jeff about creating characters, because he was so open, and you even brought several to the table right off the bat, just because I really want to have more of that representation. I mean, part of my brand moving forward that I want to make is having more representation forward, more queer characters forward, because that's where I'm coming from, so I want to see more of that. So being able to create that cast, because that's the real world. That's the world I live in. So to see it on the page is just exactly what I want.
Yeah, I think that's beautiful. And for me, I wrote my first novel 8 years ago. and I was sitting down to write it, and I was designing the main character, and I was like, well, I'm going to write a hero, a set of heroes. Who do I want to put in the world? And I felt like, you know, there's just enough cis, white, straight men in the world. For, like, we don't need any more Captain Americas right now. So for me, if I can add representation with an understanding of, like, finding people to authenticate and, like, educate me on what that representation needs to be as I am a cis white straight man. But so bringing voices into the fiction that can help create that representation is really important to me. And I think, you know, that's part of what makes the book special for me, is that, like, we get to put characters in the world that people may not have seen before.
Yeah. And I think that's so important to have more diverse voices in the forefront of the fiction world. So in episode 3, your hippie River is carrying around a ghost in a bag who can make the lights flicker and appears to be some type of military person who died in combat. Can you tell us anything more about this without spoiling too much?
Yeah, that's Bob. His name isn't actually Bob, but that's what the office calls him because it stands for Bag of Bones. Bob is the ghost that works for the team that has to stay near his bones at all times. So River is the office stoner that has been assigned to carry Bob around so that Bob can participate. There's a love. The office has a love-hate relationship with Bob.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit of an appreciation of what Bob brings to the table. But there's also, you know, the drill sergeant Korean War attitude that Bob carries around isn't always necessarily welcome.
Mm-hmm.
Or enjoyed. By the office.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Oh my God, he's such a fun... It's a fun character to have, and then it's fun... you'll see that he and River have to work together, and they are just complete opposites. I love it. It's so funny. But we had to create rules for our ghosts. It was very important to me to have rules set as to, like, what these classes of ghosts were. And I think it was important to both of us. And we came to the conclusion that Bob was one of those, what we call, they're basically like class 1 through 5. And he's one of those lower class ghosts, and so he can't leave his remains. So that's his rules. And so there are certain funny things, situations that he gets into when it comes to how far away he can get from his bag of bones.
So River is literally carrying his bones.
Oh, yes,
100%.
You are correct.
Yeah, always threatening to leave the places.
Yes.
So that Bob would be, like, stuck in weird places.
Mm-hmm.
Bob loves to, like, charge ahead to, like, you know, storming the beach at Normandy type charge. And River loves to hold back to watch Bob snap at the end of a leash. It's a fun, odd couple to write together.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So I have to ask the obligatory question for this podcast. Do you have everything planned out, or are you hoping you might get some audience engagement and participation that might direct where the story goes?
I'll speak.
Yeah, you got to talk to that one. You're the father.
So we have...
JP looks at Jeff with disdain. Yes, you made your right on the plots. Yeah.
Yes, we have goalposts that we want to reach, and we do have an endpoint for this first season. But we don't have anything after that season, and we don't have all of the episodes marked out. We have until about episode 24 with clear indication as to, like, what those scenes are. But we don't really have anything afterwards, and we are thinking about roughly 60 to 70 episodes for this first season. I know where they want to. I know roughly where I want to take them, and then we'll see, because Jeff does the first drafting, where he ends up with them. But I think part of it is that discovery part. I really want to see what the audience has to say, because really this is kind of a... I want, not to be sappy, but this is almost like a letter to them to, like, feel that cathartic feeling that we felt when we were writing it. And so I would love to have some form of participation. Of course, it's not going to stop us from writing. If we don't see it, we're just going to keep on trucking along.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I would say we would love some participation.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and I think, I think in the process of writing this kind of episodic comedy, we're finding a lot of comedy as we write things. It's like, oh, this is going to be more fun to explore as we move forward. Yeah.
Nice. So did you do any research while making this story?
Yes. Next question. Yes, so we mimicked this after a town in the Midwest. It's a few hours away from where I grew up, so I did some heavy research. I have a Google map. I have images that I want to reflect in that town. I've had to correct that Victorian houses are not common in the area a couple of times. But other than that, we've really done a lot of like location setting and then research-wise on just like voices for characters and then creating the story world. I love research. I love kind of creating that sort of story Bible. So, yes, there's been a tad of that.
Nice. I do love Google Earth and those
yes.
satellite images are great for research. So in the first three episodes, you have two different point of view characters, your older main character, Buck, and your younger main character, Ethan. I can't help but notice that there are a lot of characters on your cover. How many character point of views do you think there will be in this serial?
I think just two.
Yep.
And I would be, after the first episode, we go straight to Ethan. Mm-hmm. And we stay with him through episode 24 mm-hmm. that we have plotted out. So there's really just one.
Just one Buck episode?
There's just one Buck episode right now. And we use the Buck episode to set the world, because Ethan is a rookie in the world. So we needed to set the world before we brought the rookie in to see it for the first time. So that's the reason for the Buck kind of prologue episode, yeah. to set up the world for you.
Yeah, I would say if we ever write from a perspective of another character, it will more than likely be a prologue-like moment for them, just to kind of get their voice on the page as the forefront. We did have some talk about it with Alexis as mm-hmm. a potential in the future. But really, the cover image, we're trying to pay homage to that whole vibe with Ghostbusters, Stranger Things, and sort of that like office feel. We wanted you to know that there is a cast of characters. And even when you look at things like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and you know the whole cast of characters, it really does just follow Peralta with some other side stories with the others, but that's our main character. So really, like, if you were to reflect that in ours, Ethan is our main driver, but we do want you to know that there are these other characters.
Yeah, that being said, if it's successful and people like it, I could see in season two, like, moving beyond the season, chasing other character stories.
Definitely.
And seeing their point of views.
Definitely.
More. Yeah.
So what character are you excited for readers to read about and why?
Well, we've already talked about Buck, and I do love me some Buck. So there's a side character that we've started exploring that we haven't fully gotten into yet, a pair of them, that is the office secretary and a guy that she has hired as the social media consultant from the office. Who is constantly trying to get people to talk on Instagram, which is a no-no when you're working for a government agency that deals with ghosts that doesn't really want to be in the public eye. I'm excited about those. They're fun. I'm really excited about those two mm-hmm. characters.
I personally really like getting in the headspace of Alexis. I love her voice, and then I love her actions. Mm-hmm. She reminds me a lot of Rosa from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but then also some aspects of myself, because she's kind of grumpy. And then there are occasions where people kind of forget that she's there or she's not there, and then suddenly she's just like right behind them.
Yeah, there's a lot of Alexis popping up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I just love that so much because I don't know why. I just do that a lot. So it was really fun to write a character like that because I just felt reflective of that.
Yeah. It doesn't help that she's quiet.
Yeah.
And so she kind of will fade from the scene and then all of a sudden appear right at the right jump scare moment.
Although, like, she's quiet and extremely aggressive.
Extremely aggressive. She's very aggressively quiet. Yeah.
A lot of contrast in her character. Nice. So was there any particular media that inspired you to write humorous paranormal detective fiction?
I think Brooklyn Nine-Nine is a shared mm-hmm. passion. Schitt's Creek is also a shared passion. And something about the, like, for me, we haven't talked about this, but for me, the, like, mundane storyline of Schitt's Creek paired with the humor, with the like, absurdist humor based on the personality interactions is really inspiring as we write this.
I would totally agree. I've watched Schitt's Creek a lot. Yeah. and there are aspects of it that I also really love, and it's that, you know, in Schitt's Creek there is no homophobia, and, you know, mm-hmm. we have characters who are diverse, and we don't really have a need or a reason to sort of introduce those sorts of topics, because that's just not for us. And so, yes, I would say Schitt's Creek, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, The Office, and then a lot of that, like, homage to 80s movies. I feel like that's another one of our drives.
Who doesn't love a good 80s movie?
The 80s ghost craze that went on. I miss it, and I want it to come back.
Oh, same. 100%. So is there anything you haven't explored yet that you plan to or want to?
In the serial itself?
In the serial or in next season or something else?
There's so much we haven't explored that I want to explore. I really want to get into. I mean, we need to go really, we're going to go deep into Buck and Gary's relationship that I think is going to be really important. There's a hanging, so in the first 11 episodes, we introduce a mystery around, like, why this small town? Why is this happening in this small town? And who's behind it? And so that's going to be a major driver for the first 60 episodes that I think I'm excited about readers hearing and unfolding.
Yeah, I really like the world building that we have for this and the potential direction. There are some things that we are going to be hinting at fairly soon with the uniqueness of the world. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to be vague, and it's probably coming off strange, but ultimately there are...
It's very vague.
It's so vague.
you gotta read and find out. That's
yeah,
how
one, you gotta
read
and find
out.
But ultimately, yeah. Like, there is more to this world than what can be seen, and there may be some people that are more unique than they come off to be. And I really am excited to explore that more.
Excellent. So one last question. What do you like most about writing serial fiction?
I like reading, and I'm a short story writer at heart. I would actually say all of my novels are just strings of short stories that already end in kind of like a climax that intends to bring you back to the next chapter. So this is kind of what I love to do. It's like, let's write 2,000 words that somebody can sit down and digest, feel fulfilled, and want to keep going. So for me, this is like, you know, passion wheelhouse.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, I would say the same thing. I really love writing that shorter fiction. That's kind of like where a lot of my current published works are, is in with short stories. And so being able to, it's so weird. It's like doing long form, but with short stories. And you just don't really see that in other forms. So it's been really fun to not fully outline everything, because I am very used to fully outlining everything. And I almost don't want to, because I want the story, the way that we make each other laugh when we write a couple of these, to drive the direction of it. So I really like seeing a more polished, finished product and then being able to build off the next few episodes off of that.
Yeah.
Which is strange and really fun. And something I would never see in the novels that I've been working on.
Great. Well, I can't wait to read more episodes. So thank you for joining me today and talking about your serial.
Thanks for having us.
Our thanks today to JT Blakely for letting us share their episode. If you liked it, you can read the first 3 episodes free on Kindle Vella. The link is in the show notes.
Also, if you're a writer, we have a companion podcast, The Writer's Serial Fiction Show, where we talk with authors about their stories and discuss the elements of writing compelling serial fiction.
We want to thank you for listening to The Writer's Serial Fiction Show. If you know someone who might enjoy the show, send them your favorite episode link. And if you want to leave an Apple Podcast review, we read all of them and take your suggestions. You can also leave a comment on this episode on our website, serialfictionshow.com. Finally, we now have a Patreon where you can get Serial Fiction Show episodes early and other great stuff. We have tons of things in the works. Check it out at patreon.com/serialfictionshow. Thanks, and we'll see you next time with another Serial Fiction episode. And that's a wrap.
We have a writer's version.
I feel like I was not even like, I just started this like a regular podcast. It's not even like we're together in the same room. I'm just like, so,
you're serious. You did take me back a little bit. I was like, oh, we're going into it right now.
Here we go.
That's what we usually do. And I'm like, this is a little bit of a different situation because we're actually together.
Yeah.
It's really funny.
But I'm like, now nobody even knows that we're together. It's just Raiders like a regular, they don't care.
Yeah. We're in all this conference like, bah, bah, bah,
we can do that for the writer's.